This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. This week, scientists announced they've been able to perform a sort of cut and paste with a living microbe's genome, choosing snippets of DNA to remove and replacing each with a new, slightly different piece of DNA. Think of that, the find and replace function in your word processor, but they're doing it with short sequences of DNA instead of words. They're experimenting with the well-known bacterium E. coli. What's even more intriguing than the ability to search and replace is that after making these substitutions in multiple strains of E. coli, the bacteria appear to be doing just fine, working from their new set of genetic instructions, not appearing to function abnormally. But why would you want to switch out snippets of DNA? Could you maybe convert bacteria into little factories pumping out oil or medicine? Or could you even use this technique to completely rewrite the language, the grammar, of DNA as it exists today? That's what we'll be talking about. 1-800-989-8255. You can tweet us at SciFry, at SCIFRI. Peter Carr is senior researcher at MIT's Lincoln Laboratory in Lexington, Massachusetts, and a researcher at the Center for Bits and Atoms. Dr. Carr is part of the science team whose research appears in the journal Science. Welcome to Science Friday.
Thank you, Ira. Thanks for having me on.
Why make this DNA switch? What can you do once you've done all these little search and replaces?
Well, there's a lot of different kinds of things that can be done with the fundamental technique. One of the ideas that excited us early on was the question of whether we could fundamentally re-engineer the genetic code itself for the organism that we were working in. Again, one application out of many. With an altered genetic code, there are a number of new properties you would predict that these cells would have that would make them stand out from, in a sense, from all other living organisms on the planet or that we know about at this point.
And so so you're basically snipping out, let's say, little letters, three letters at a time, and substituting another three letters in there?
Yep. So the techniques that we've come up with are for manipulating DNA at both the very small level, down to the single DNA letters, up to moving around large swaths of a whole chromosome, hundreds of thousands to millions of DNA base pairs. And it's the combination of these two techniques that's especially powerful to enable you to do all kinds of different changes that you might want to achieve. So there have been a lot of different ways to do cut and paste with DNA over the history of genetic engineering. One thing that's enabled by our techniques is going up in scale. So we targeted several hundred different changes that we wanted to make spread throughout the genome of this organism. Mm-hmm. And in fact, while most of the changes that we made were single DNA base changes, with the impact being is that the way genes are written out in three-letter words, you change the third letter of that word and you change the word. So in our case, the word we were changing, we were taking all of the significant TAG words and changing them to TAA, which has a synonymous meaning in the genetic code.
Mm-hmm. Does the microbe recognize that it's been changed?
There are small changes that we've seen in things like how quickly the bacteria grow. We've done kind of the coarse-grained look at how these many modified strains have performed, very simple metrics, again, like how fast they grow and how well our techniques continue to work in them as we've modified them. And mm-hmm. the deviations from where they were when they started before we modified, those are quite small. They can still grow on a minimal amount of nutrients. You give them sugar and salts and nitrogen, and they're still happy growing on that like they were before we started modifying them.
Mm-hmm. Is the point here to create some worker bees, so to speak, for you?
That's definitely part of it, that we'd like this work to be a part of the larger picture of how microbes, single-celled organisms, other biological systems can be best engineered for biomanufacturing, using living cells to make all kinds of different materials and compounds, big and small, whether it's energy, fuels, or a drug, or something else.
Mm-hmm. And is this basically then a proof of concept that you've shown us now that this can actually be done, and done rather cheaply?
I would say that we've spent a lot of time and money getting it to work the first time, and it would certainly be cheap cheap to do it from here on out, let's put it that way. And that's the way most of these efforts go.
Well, that's how most of technology works. It costs a lot to make that first widget, but the second one is half price, right?
That's right. So to be clear, we haven't yet achieved that milestone that we're close to now of having altered that one codon everywhere throughout the genome of a single organism. Mm-hmm. In order to get, because this was a big project and hundreds of changes to make, we spread the work out actually over several different organisms, several different strains of the same organism, each with different subsets of the changes we wanted to make. And then the second half of it, this cage technology that my colleague Farron Isaacs originated, is a controlled way of stitching those big modified chunks of the genome together into a unified whole. Mm-hmm. So we started with 32 different strains with their own segment to be combined. And now at the point that we've published here, we're at the quarterfinals. We have four strains, each with 1/4 of the modifications to be brought together.
Mm-hmm. And now, if you make these changes in the DNA of an organism and the functions that it does, would that make it so that certain other organisms don't recognize it anymore? Maybe they don't recognize it enough to attack it or try to do something with it?
Well, so it wouldn't affect necessarily the way that organism looks on the outside to another cell, but it would dramatically affect the way it runs on the inside. And so what that means is, for example, in a bacterial population, whether it's in your sink at home or in the ocean or in your digestive tract, bacteria are able to swap pieces of DNA back and forth between each other and share functions, and that gives them different kinds of advantages. If you have two organisms with different genetic codes, and let me be clear here, throughout most of known life, there's a genetic code that's nearly universal. And that means that's what makes cloning DNA possible in the first place. That's what makes it possible to take a piece of DNA for the human insulin gene and use it in bacteria to produce a lot of insulin for medical purposes. It's because both organisms are using the same genetic code. Mm-hmm. But if you engineer an organism to use a completely different genetic code, then you should block the ability to transfer function back and forth. If you move DNA into that unique organism, it won't be able to translate the outside DNA correctly. So you'd block the transfer of function from one organism to another.
Mm-hmm. And what is the advantage of that?
There's a bunch of them. One of them, the prediction is if you make the genetic code differences extreme enough, and we're still speculating and thinking about what the bar is for different enough, then, for example, if you had in biomanufacturing now, often they're growing big tanks of bacteria, and those bacteria occasionally get infected by viruses. In case the name for one of those in bacteria is a bacteriophage.
Yes.
And the reason the bacteriophage can infect in the first place is, again, because it expects the near-universal genetic code.
Right.
If your engineered organism had that different code, then it should, in principle, be immune to that viral infection. And sometimes thousands to millions of dollars of biomanufactured chemicals or resources are lost because of this kind of infection that happens in the factory.
Mm-hmm. Well, I thank you for taking time to share that. It's a fascinating study, and the fact that you've been able to change the code is quite interesting. Thank you very much for taking time to be with us, Dr. Carr.
Oh, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Peter Carr is senior researcher at MIT's Lincoln Laboratory in Lexington, Massachusetts, and a researcher at the Center for Bits and Atoms.